Hi, and welcome to the episode 3 of the Smart Selling Podcasts. Today is going to be a little bit different. It's the beginning of March, and I thought what I would do is kind of go through an article that I've put in the newsletter. There are a lot of folks that have told me that they don't have time to read it and would certainly appreciate it if I put it into an audio form. So I figured, what the heck? I have to have something to put in my podcasts, so here it is. Basically, the article is called Daredevil or Extreme. And the question I ask you is, do you consider yourself to be a daredevil salesperson or an extreme salesperson? Like, this question came up in a recent conversation with a friend, and it got me thinking about the definition of the terms daredevil and extreme as we currently use it in conversations and in the media. I think it all has to do with how the individual being described handles risk. The daredevil knows that there's risk in the activity in which they're about to engage. They confront their fear, recognize that there's danger, then they close their eyes and forge ahead. Like the daredevil, the extreme participant recognizes that they are at risk in the activity. They devote a tremendous amount of time to training and practice. They study the processes that work and plan for contingencies. When they proceed, they use their learned skills and knowledge to minimize the risks as much as possible. Now, as I've discussed before in this newsletter, sales is a really high-risk business. In my career as a sales manager and a sales VP, I've seen a lot of sales reps who are real daredevils. I mean, they'll jump into every opportunity with enthusiasm and no regard for their personal safety. When they win, it's spectacular to watch. The problem is, they crash a lot more than they win. If I was asked, you know, I prefer working with the extreme sales rep. Now, if you happen to be a daredevil, let's talk a little bit about how you might move from daredevil to extreme. First, you have to be able to identify the risks. In my discussions with over 2,000 sales reps from companies in a wide range of industries, there are always three main areas of risk that they identify. And sometimes there are a whole lot of words that surround the identification, but it always comes down to these three. The first risk is what I call a broken solution. And in this case, you've conducted your entire sales cycle, and throughout it, you believed you were in the lead. Then at the end, your prospect starts asking you questions about capabilities that you never mentioned, or tells you that they can get the same thing from one of your competitors for less money. Now, often, we ascribe this to losing because our price was too high. In actuality, we lost because we failed to create a vision of a solution that positioned our unique features in such a way as to make them essential to our prospect. When two products are viewed as equal in capabilities, the only differentiator is price. Okay, I'll say that again. When two products are viewed as equal in capability by the prospect, the only differentiator is price. Now, it's the job of every buyer to find two products that they believe are equal in capability and let the vendors battle it out over price. And on the counter to that, it's the job of every salesperson to ensure that his or her product is never viewed as equal to another. So that gets us to identifying your unique capabilities and understanding how to position them so that they become requirements, because this is a key skill in reducing risk. If we spend our time with our prospects discussing their problems and their attendant causes, we can help them uncover and identify those that our unique capabilities will match. By helping them understand how these capabilities are integral to solving their problems, we create a vision of a solution that cannot be duplicated by our competitors. The key to reducing this area of risk is to be patient and take the time to help the prospect clearly define their problems and the causal factors, and then leading them to the conclusion that your products and services are uniquely qualified to help resolve them. The second area of risk that's most often identified is what I call not enough motivation. And here, we get to the end of our sell cycle, and the prospect informs us that there simply isn't any money in the budget to purchase our product. You know, we kick ourselves for not asking earlier in the process whether there was budget, but here's the secret. their decision to not move forward had nothing to do with money, and it had nothing to do with budget, and it had everything to do with the value of the solution to the problem they're facing. And that's the rub. Remember, unless the prospect knew about you and your products during their last budget cycle, you won't be in the budget. That's obvious. But it doesn't mean that they can't reallocate the budget to solve their problems if there is enough value to motivate them to do so. If you've spent your time, your selling time, focused on pitching your product, you've most probably created a situation where you are hopeful that the prospect will see as much value in it as you do. And that, my friend, is a major risk. The second contributor to risk in this area is not understanding what is motivating the prospect to solve their problem. What does this mean to them? What's it worth to the organization? Can they cost justify it? Do they know how to show that it is cost effective? Can you help them? Too often I've seen really creative salespeople present outstanding cost justification models to their prospects only to get shot down unmercifully. The problem they run into is that they are presenting a very cogent argument, but the prospect has not bought into the premise. Here's how I would advise you to reduce this risk. First, understand that people make emotional decisions for logical reasons. First, we decide to purchase a product based on what we believe having it will do for us. This is true for company purchases as well as personal ones. Once we have decided to buy something, we then look for the logical basis or cost justification to support it to others. So the first thing to do is find out the personal value that the prospect ascribes to solving their problem. Is it a promotion, recognition, more time with the family, world peace? I don't know, but you need to find that out. And then secondly, you have to build your own understanding of how to quantify the value of your product. Now, this requires you to look at your offerings and figure out what metrics would be meaningful. When I first got into the education market after a career in hospital information systems and manufacturing and distribution systems, I was dismayed to find out that there was no obvious economic benefit to schools if they succeeded in improving achievement. In my previous lives, any improvement in performance had a corresponding tangible increase in value. Now what was I going to do? Well, with the help of some colleagues, I went back and looked at the two most meaningful measures of value I had used in the business sector, return on investment, or ROI, and least cost alternative, which I'll call LCA here, least cost alternative, to see if they could be applied to education. The calculation of ROI, return on investment, is you take the return that you would receive, subtract out the investment that you had to make in order to get that return, and divide it by investment. And it measures whether an investment provides an acceptable rate of return. However, as you can see from the equation, it requires a return. In education, we identified that the source of revenue is based on student attendance. Therefore, any time that a student stops attending a school, the amount paid by the state for that student is lost. Kids stop attending because they drop out or their parents opt for private schools or homeschooling. Now, if we could show how our product could address the reasons behind these factors, our prospect could estimate the number of students that they could save. And then this translated to a dollar amount that could be compared to the cost. Eureka! We found a valid model for ROI. But what if the key issue was determined to be improving test scores or making adequate yearly progress, AYP? As I stated before, there's no revenue increase for improving achievement. So we began looking at the second model, LCA, or least cost alternative. In this case, we need to determine what it would take to solve the problems, identify the acceptable alternative solutions, and then determine which is the least expensive. This was always my favorite, since it required the prospect and me to go through a detailed discussion of how we would go about solving the problems. When we got down to evaluating alternatives, it was always between my product and additional or existing personnel or a more expensive alternative. Once we get to the point where we found two alternatives that were equal in capability, what we were doing was simply matching out which one would be of the lower cost. And in information system sales, you always know that we are going to be less expensive than additional personnel or existing personnel. That doesn't mean we're replacing personnel. It just means that we are less expensive than existing personnel, and they're having a tough time trying to figure out how to keep or hire new personnel as it is, or new teachers. So we know that for a fact. Now, I've only discussed one example for each one of these two models, but don't let that limit your thinking. Think of it this way. If you and your prospect can identify an increase in revenue resulting from solving a problem, then ROI works. If you and your prospect are looking at less expensive methods of solving a problem that they are committed to addressing, then least cost alternative, LCA, works. If you can see revenue increase as well as cost reduction, both ROI and LCA will work, and they can work together. Now, whether you're using ROI or LCA, the key to success in minimizing this risk is to make sure that the prospect participates in the development of the metrics. You can and should guide them through the process, but the numbers and the assumptions must come from them. If you live by this rule, you will never again get shot down during a cost justification presentation. Now, the third area of risk I was going to chat with you about today is not enough authority. And we've all seen it happen. We've all had it happen. We go through our sales activities, we demo, we go on a site visits, we make presentations, and then we give our prospect our proposal. It contains all the information we can provide, configurations, boilerplate features and benefits, and of course, pricing. It is beautiful. Our prospect looks at us and says, "This really looks good. You know, I'm going to take it up the chain of command and get it approved." Well, you have just increased your risk substantially. You know, you ask your prospect, "Well, when should I follow up?" And they say, "Give me a call next week." And when you call the next week, they tell you that they haven't had a chance to discuss it, but they plan on doing it this week. You ask again, "When should I follow up?" And they answer, "I'll give you a call." At that point, you are toast. Very literally, the absolute last thing that you want to give your prospect is your proposal. Since it has all of the information they need, once they have it, there is no need to talk with you until they are ready. Giving a proposal to someone other than the final decision maker increases this risk even more. Make sure that you understand how decisions are made in the organization. Use your sponsor to provide access to the person with the authority over the resources for this transaction. Use your resources, and your resources are demos, references, site visits, etc., to bargain with your sponsor for access to authority. Insist on a pre-proposal review with the authority person before committing your proposal to final form. If you follow these three rules, you will significantly alleviate this important area of risk. So here it is in the short form. To avoid the risk of a broken solution, change your focus to understanding their problems and linking your unique capabilities. To reduce the risk of coming up with not enough value or not enough motivation, find out what it means to the individual and the organization to solve the problems. Using your knowledge and expertise, help your prospect develop a real, quantified cost-benefit proposition. And lastly, to reduce the risk of getting to the end of the sell cycle with somebody who does not have enough authority, ask your prospect how decisions are made in the organization. Ask more than one person in the organization. And don't deliver your proposal without a pre-proposal review with the decision maker. Keep these three major areas of risk in focus at all times as you go through your sell cycle, and you will successfully develop yourself from a daredevil to an extreme sales professional. Hey, good selling. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast, and I'll look forward to talking with you next time. If you have any comments or would like to ask me any questions, or if you want to share your ideas, either give me a call at the message line, which is 425-939-0438. Again, 425-939-0438. Or drop me an email at larry@smartselling.net. Or, I keep urging you guys to do this, but please go to the forum, sign up, and enter your thoughts and ideas there so you can share them with others. Anyway, have a great one. I'll look forward to talking to you next time. Bye-bye.